Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Pure power, bold style and unadulterated road presence. The all-new Opel Mokka.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
John texted on 51551 to take issue with me describing shaving as the biggest pain in the backside. No, it's not, Philip. I enjoy shaving. It's good for my mental health because when you look good, you feel good. Kind regards, he says. Well, I'll tell you what, John, if you can shave for me, I will agree with you. But until then, let us agree to differ. 51551 for your text. Today in Geneva, Presidents Biden and Putin meet. The meeting comes after the G7 and NATO summits and relations between the two countries, according to Vladimir Putin anyway, are at their lowest point in recent years. Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham and editor of EA Worldview, joins me now. Would you agree with Vladimir Putin's analysis, Scott? Are they at their lowest point in recent years?
Well, if US-Russian relations are at their lowest point in recent years, and I think that's a fair assessment, I would suggest the first place to start looking is in Vladimir Putin's mirror. In other words, I say that for two reasons. The big shift which has occurred in recent years is not that the US has turned Russia into a victim and damaged relations. It's been a much more aggressive Russian policy from, for example, annexing territory like Crimea, from military operations in other areas of the world, such as inside Syria, to, of course, cyber operations, almost cyber warfare, and interference in elections. And the second thing I would say about Putin's statement is to say that we're at the lowest position ever is sort of a Putin tactic, which is if he doesn't like the way the summit goes today with Biden, to portray Russia as the victim. Specifically, Putin is the victim. We're here. Why are you picking on us? Everything that is disruptive in international relations, that's the fault of Washington.
That sounds like a kind of a lose-lose scenario for the White House engaging with them at all. So why give him a platform? Why have this meeting?
I mean, that's an excellent question. And I think it's one the White House considered really carefully over the last few months. Because on the one hand, do you isolate Putin? Do you refuse to meet with him in light of the fact, for example, that he has attempted to assassinate and now has indefinitely detained one of the opposition leaders, Alexei Navalny? Do you isolate him because of the ongoing Russian cyber attacks, including on the U.S. government and U.S. corporations? Or do you engage with him? And I think they've made this calculation, which is if you isolate Putin, he'll continue to say he's the victim. It won't stop Russia's disruption. If you engage with him, then you draw a fairly firm line. You call him out on these Russian activities and set the rules of the game, while, it must be said, looking for points where you can, if not cooperate, have a meeting of the minds. For example, earlier this year, the Biden administration and the Kremlin agreed to extend the last remaining nuclear treaty between Moscow and Washington.
Okay. That sounds like a very transactional approach to the relationship. Do you have any idea what actually happens when the two teams get into the same room with each other? Do the United States sit down and say, look, cyber attacks, electoral interference, Navalny, Crimea, and so on and so on and so on, but here's the things we can cooperate on?
There'll be sort of an agenda, whether or not it's formal or where it's sort of more informal, that both sides will have walking into this. It won't be a completely, as it were, cold in your face, Joe saying to Vlad, all right, here we go, and Vlad saying, fist up. And both sides know quite well what the concerns of the other are, because well before this summit, there will have been contacts at working level between diplomatic staffs, for example. I think, probably going beyond your question, however, the idea that we're going to get an agreement out of this summit, some type of sweeping, reconciliation, that's not what is here. We're not going to get any detailed agreement on these issues. Rather, the Americans will try to set the idea that this is the rules of the game. The Russians will try to set out their, as it were, position on how international relations should be configured. And they're going to sort of fence with each other. Because remember, it's not just U.S. and Russia that are there. In large part, Joe Biden comes into that room having already had his meetings, for example, with members of the G7, including European members, to try to agree a common line after, let's be honest, the very uncommon and disruptive line that Donald Trump had.
That raises an interesting question in my mind. Is the world order better off with the G7 and then these bilateral meetings with Russia, or would the world be better off trying to bring Russia back inside the tent to piddle out by getting the G8 up and running again, bringing Russia back into the fold?
I don't think you can bring Russia back into the G8 if you're going to maintain the idea of that notion of order. I mean, let's be very clear. What Russia did was to annex part of another country. You know, they annexed Crimea in 2014, and they then tried to support separatists to split Ukraine, to split the East from the West. Now, we can argue whether or not there's some justification for the Russians to claim Crimea, but the way they did it was a clear violation of international law. It was a clear violation of, as you were, the rules of the game. And when you go further with that, which is not only the interference in the U.S. elections, they interfered with cyber attacks in the French elections. They did it in Germany. They've done it in the United Kingdom, carried out various operations, including over the Brexit referendum. You know, you can't just simply say, hey, it's all okay, guys. Hey, no problem here. Now, how do you get back to a G8? That, again, is the question which is put to Putin. Do you want a confrontational relationship with the world, or do you want to come back in on some of these behaviors, not, you know, because we're threatening Cold War, but the idea that it is better to find a consensus on key issues that include not just the Americans, but Europe and Asia and the rest of the world.
One of the most dramatic moments in the Trump presidency, take your pick, but to my mind, one of the most dramatic moments was the image of Trump standing beside Putin in their joint press conference after their first meeting and saying that he took Putin's word on electoral interference over that of his own intelligence agencies. I note now that they have completely abandoned the press conference, presumably to avoid the possibility of any kind of such awkward cornering of Joe Biden.
Snap, but not just because of a cornering of Biden. Both sides want to control the narrative there. So Biden will not want anything to disrupt what will be a fairly firm line with Putin, and he won't want journalists asking that question that Trump completely flunked, which is, do you trust your agencies or do you trust the Russian leader? The Russians will want to control their narrative, or I should say the Kremlin will want to control their narrative, and that could very easily be disrupted by journalists over a series of Russian actions where they have not been the victim, but arguably the aggressor. So now you're just seeing both sides, as it were, playing it safe, which is, in many respects, turn down the noise. Turn down the noise that you had during the Trump years, in part fed, I've got to say, you know, by the White House and by the Kremlin. Turn down the noise to see if we can get to some type of sensible interaction. And the Americans will also want to do that for another reason. Beyond Donald Trump, Washington made a big misstep in 2009 at the outset of the Obama administration when they declared they were going to reset relations with Russia. You know, after Russia had been in a war with Georgia, after it had put pressure on the Baltic states, Biden will not want to go back to the administration in which he was vice president and say, oh, we're just going back to another reset of relations in view of the fact that resetting for some would mean letting Putin off the hook.
So if there is to be a policy of containment, then does that mean that we're not likely to see anything on things like a reprimand from Putin to Lukashenko for hijacking Ryanair planes, or the plight of Alexei Navalny being dealt with?
Now, Putin's dug in. Putin's dug in on the Navalny issue because to give way to Navalny means he shows weakness at home. And Putin carries a lot of support at home. You know, and he carries a lot of support for his stance he has versus the West of being the tough guy, despite the fact that Russia's in an economic difficulty. You're not going to see Putin backing down on terms of, you know, supporting Belarus. You're not going to see him backing down on his pressure on Ukraine, threatening to cut off gas supplies. For Putin to back down gives up his persona. He gives up that image that I am as powerful as you are. What I think you might see is actually on the specific issue of cyber attacks. The two sides declare that they'll work together to limit cyber attacks. Now, you might say that's ironic, given that Russia has been one of the largest perpetrators. But clearly, it's in their interest to shift the focus elsewhere. And the Americans might agree to say, look, let's do something to control cyber attacks, because they think it might put Moscow on notice that we're watching them.
Yeah, I noted on that Putin engaged in you know, little verbal pirouettes the other day on the issue of cyber attacks, saying, oh, well, we'll take care of our cyber criminals as soon as the United States starts taking care of its own. How do you deal with somebody who debates and engages on that level?
You call out whataboutism, which is what it is. Well, what about the Americans? Look, if the Americans have carried out cyber operations that are in violation of international law, and there's a good argument that they have done so, for example, in the case of Iran, something we can discuss on another program, then you call that out. But you don't absolve yourself, Russia, for very aggressive cyber attacks on numerous countries by simply trying to point at Washington. I think beyond that, what you have to say is that even if you get to an agreement, we're going to deal with cyber attacks today, you've got to have your eyes open. The Kremlin doesn't have like people in Vladimir Putin's office to carry out these attacks. They operate through a series of layers, through almost what we call cutouts. So it would be supposedly private citizens who are doing this, actually through outlets like the Internet Research Agency. We should not be, you know, deceived by the fact that the Russian military intelligence and the Russian secret services have carried out these basically what we call hybrid warfare on behalf of Vladimir Putin. And even if you disagree with a lot of what America has done, and I do, you know, you don't just simply say, well, you know, we have clean hands because the other side we're going to claim is dirty.
Hmm. Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Coming up after the break, extreme cleaning.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.